He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
And the New York Auto Show is almost over. I think it is over as of this broadcast show. And it was a bit boring to me. And I think my group that went with me was a bit disappointed at all the hoopla that I didn't really talk too much about on this show didn't really materialize as being interesting hoopla for me. I will tell you right off the bat that my most favorite stand there was the Rivian SUV and pickup display, which is they are two all-electric vehicles that will be, you can pre-order them now, and they're for delivery in late 2020. There's no guarantee that that timetable will be reached. But it certainly had a lot of people looking at it. The key question in my mind, other than the fact that I thought the vehicles were really interestingly, nicely designed, very different than anything that the Americans have designed so far and anybody else, which gets interest in, no matter what the buying interest will ultimately be, is that they are all electric. And is there room for anything other than a passenger use of a vehicle for a pickup truck, for an electric pickup truck to really be able to do daily duty as an all-electric truck, if it is used as some contractors like to use them? It may never become a heavy-duty pickup truck. That is my opinion. That's not the marketer's opinion or hope.
So they're thinking it for commercial use.
Well, it's built for potentially to be rugged like the American pickups. I didn't really look at it to see how rugged its structure is. What was interesting about it is because it has no engine, there is a useful storage space under the hood. And there's a regular hood-looking hood on the pickup truck because it's got a front end like a pickup truck. But it's basically a hollow box down inside under the hood. So you not only have a rear pickup box
in
the back, you've got a bed. Yeah, you've got a front box for suitcases or golf clubs or whatever else might fit in there. Maybe it'll be a beer cooler. Who knows? But it was fun to look at them, though, the two vehicles they had there. The SUV, which was a large SUV size equivalent to maybe the Lincoln Navigator in size, the Chevrolet and the Chevrolet equivalents, was very attractive in my opinion. They had a sort of a green color for them, but not, I happen to like that color green. But the interior looked very nice, and we'll see where that goes. Now, I believe because of their size and therefore their ability to build them with rather large battery packs, they are going for a 400-mile charge range.
400, did you say?
400.
Now, who is Rivian? Have you figured that out?
I didn't look at it. Jay was going to do that. And of course, Jay's not with us this
week. All right,
so
we'll have to wait because
But and that was the most interesting vehicle on the whole show. You know, the Fords and the Chevys and the Dodges all had variants out of new cars coming on stream, Hyundais and Nissans and that one. But there wasn't, other than concept cars, which are not on the production line yet, there wasn't a lot of very, you know, new ready-to-purchase vehicles other than some electric variants that are available.
And did most of your group feel the same way?
Yeah, I think they did. The group was only three of us, so there were two others besides myself, and we were mostly together the whole time. I was looking for more interest. Somebody said there were no Corvettes under the Chevrolet banner, but there was one Corvette at the Chevrolet banner. But it's the existing Corvette. It wasn't the long, well, the mid-engine one that's coming will be unveiled sometime in August somewhere. And, you know, it would have been sort of neat if Chevrolet could have snuck that in as an unannounced special display to really surprise everybody and get people revved up about the new mid-engine Corvette that's coming. And so far, all I have seen have been camouflage versions of silhouette, which mostly show you the silhouette, although in the apparent physical form that it's going to be when it becomes uncamouflaged and a painted version or a colored version shows up looking like a real vehicle. They have been shown in sneak pictures to date.
And one last quick, any sense of why it was just so uninspiring?
Well, because I don't think there's a lot of inspiring design alterations coming that can be made any more different than other than the Rivian, which is unique in its front end fascia, its tail lights, its grille, all that. I mean, the silhouettes are very similar to what's already on in other makers' showrooms, but it still was unique enough to really stand out and capture my attention. Subaru had a very nice display, and they had an environmental sort of, they had a backdrop of a mountain and streams, and apparently, which I never got to see, they had something that was meant to sort of mimic a volcano-like display, a show that would go off every, I don't know what the timeline was, but it wasn't like...
Like Old Faithful?
I remember
standing in line
for
it.
It might have been every hour, but if it was, I missed it because we were there for 3 hours and I wasn't near the Subaru display to hear any hoopla about it going down. I would have liked to have seen it, but it didn't happen to go off in our time frame. The Ascent and the new 2020 Outback, which they are touting as all new, the interior is going to be quite new in the 2020 Subaru Outback to mimic the new Ascent interior with a bigger display screen in the center, touchscreen to run a lot of things. They say it's going to be all new. I looked at it. It's certainly not looking all new. It looks very much like the existing Outback, and there's nothing wrong with that. If it ain't broke, don't try to fix it.
I was just doing math. I had to use my fingers in an abacus. But do you realize that it's about 36 years? Yeah, from when Subaru was the, what is it? Not quite the Kia. Since Subaru was the Yugo of
36. I think it's more than that, isn't it? I think it. Well, it doesn't matter. It was a long time
ago. It was the early.
We had one of the earliest. My family had one of the earliest Subaru tin boxes,
right.
A little Subaru wagon, and it was really narrow. It was a four door, so it was. It had pretty good interior space, but it was tinny by today's standards. And I don't think it cost $7,000.
And I remember a person getting it because she needed to go back and forth between Lower Manhattan and North Salem.
And as we know today, rust-proofing has come a long way since the days of those lines of vehicles, the Subarus, the early Toyotas and all that. But it served its purpose well. I do remember driving it. It was very light in feel because it was light in weight and light in thickness of metal and all that. But it did. It ran very well. It was all-wheel drive. You know, it had a good luggage capacity because it was basically a very square style vehicle box. And that continues to disappear ever so slightly in some SUV models, a little more distinctly in some other SUV models, as they seem to, I don't know whether they measure the squunching of the rear by having something heavy sit on it, like an elephant, like we keep talking about, or otherwise, the designers seem to think that this redefining of the rear structure, physical styling of it, is actually useful. It's not useful at all. I suspect it doesn't really contribute significantly to a miles per gallon increase in the silhouette as it goes down the road, but it seems to be stuck in designers' minds as a way to go, which means the rear quarter windows get smaller, the height between the floor and the roof gets less so as you reach the rear opening hatch, be it a hatch or whatever. And
Jill gets increasingly car sick.
Yeah, well, you may get eye sick. I get eye sick of it. I mean, I just, You know,
being a passenger in a car with a high belt line and no outside is just like being in a submarine.
Now, to that point, you know, we have been talking about these higher belt lines in the front end, and in the front, the front pillars and the windshield are so thick that you can lose a tractor trailer in what is basically a 6-inch or 5-inch or even less thick front pillar in certain cases. And now the news over the weekend has started to focus on the rear passenger safety compartment now. And I don't know what that's going to do to the high belt line, more so than it's already happened, because they're now, although some of the TV's elements were showing front end crashes and front car crashes for rear seat occupants with neck snapping visuals, and seat belts that didn't seem to hold them in the seat as tightly as they should, and are trying to suggest that the National Highway Transportation Safety Association can't make the rules, but they're trying to suggest that automakers should start looking at increasing the safety of belted-in passengers in the rear. Anybody who opens the front doors and the rear doors of most of the vehicles today will notice a distinct difference between the solidity and heaviness of the front doors versus the lightness and possibly less safety factors of the rear doors, from standpoint of seldom but still existing side impact collisions. There's no question that the doors in the back don't have the same, in my opinion,
which is pretty terrible, since you're supposed to put your baby or your dog's back.
Well, you've got babies and car seats and all that, and they're saying, you know, there's an ad out or something out saying, is the front the safest place in your car versus the rear? The answer might well be yes, even if it had to involve child seats in the front passenger seat, because the front sections, the clips of the front of the cars, have been rigidized and made very strong because of all these safety crashes that are going on. They're trying to figure out every angle that you could possibly be hit in which the front passengers could be saved from leg-crushing compaction of the front ends.
But they're just not doing that with the whole car.
Well, they don't need to with the rear so much, because if you've got a diagonal or front area collision, the collision starts at the front of the car, and that's right, where you want to stop the collapse before it gets into the front passenger compartment. And it's not going to, if it doesn't get into the front passenger compartment, it's not going to get to the rear passenger compartment. Now, a rear end situation could be different,
right,
and a side collision, a broadside collision, might harm the passengers in the rear before they harm them in the front, if only because the rear sections of those cars, in my view, do not appear to be as strong as the front, if only because the doors are lighter, and therefore if they're lighter, they're not as crash resistant. I'm pretty sure I'm correct with that statement. I'm not an engineer. They talk about high strength steel, high strength aluminum throughout different sections of the bodies of the car, but who really knows? And I measure by the weight of the door when you open it. And the front doors are bigger, admittedly, than the rear doors, but still the rear doors swing ever so much so more lightly and flimsily than the front doors do. And most of the vehicles that I have had the occasion to test the feelings of the doors. Enough on that. Airbags are coming back into the picture again. You know, the Takata airbag debacle was a major one, and there are still many, many, many cars on the road that have yet to probably be actually repaired because they are used cars. They've gone through several owners, and who knows who has received and paid attention to the notices that have continued to go out on those cars, or to the news blips that periodically appear on the nightly news shows and in the newspapers. But this one happens to apparently not involve the airbags themselves, but the wiring. Now, wiring, I guess wiring can deteriorate, or maybe wiring, whatever. But I haven't read the article, but 12.1 million vehicles or 12.3 million vehicles could have bad wiring. And bad wiring would simply mean the airbags wouldn't go off. That is probably as bad as maybe as the defective airbags that could maim you in the front of your body, or maybe not. If the airbags didn't go off because of bad wiring and you died because the airbags would have made the difference between living and dying in the impact, then the wiring is a worse situation. But that will be possibly much more difficult to assess and fix, if only because the wiring, depending on what wiring they're talking about, the wiring is embedded behind dashboards and indoors as they go to the front to rear or whatever, and they could be much more difficult to access to fix if you had to replace a wiring harness that was related directly to airbag function. But it's going to make the news, and we'll have to go through that. The other item of news that will maybe only impact us as potential buyers is that there's a headline in one of the trade papers that says, it says, overstuffed. And the sub-headline is, near record inventories eat dealer profits as floor plan costs surge. Floor plan costs are the costs of holding a parking lot full of vehicles that you haven't been able to pay cash for, and you have to pay interest on those the floor planning costs along with the financing of those numbers of vehicles to a bank if you're using a bank, or to a manufacturer if they are loaning you the money, so to speak, while you wait to sell them. It might just mean that car prices will cave a little bit more than the manufacturers and the dealers want because they do not want to have large stocks of cars lingering under the sun week after week unsold because people are stopped buying cars because the prices have been going up, the interest rates have been going up, and people have not felt that they needed to buy a car as desperately as they were before. So that's just a technical thing about the automobile business, which may get passed down to the used car situation as well, but be it as it may, enough on that. Now, I seem to not have brought another flyer that I copied this morning, but it goes to the heart of what I also saw at the auto show, which is the many, many, many large-sized front grills on vehicles, which I had a composite page to show you and to talk about, not to list all the names of the vehicles because they're numerous, from the Lexuses to the Chevy Blazer to the Chevrolet trucks, pickup trucks.
Now, these are not just cosmetic,
the front
though,
right? Grills, yes. They're cosmetic, but they're all – front grills are porous. They let air into the engine compartment. And you'd think that they were making them bigger because the engines needed more cooling. That was something in the article that I heard.
Well, that was
headline,
something we discussed last week also.
We discussed the sizes of some of the grills. And some of them are, in my view, very ugly to the cars themselves. The only way you hide these large grills is if you buy a black car, because most of these grills are blacked out. And where they stand out against colors like reds and blues and greens, and you can silvers and whites, and you see them coming down the road looking like a gaping fish with its mouth wide open, a shark. In black, they can sort of disappear, and you don't really notice them. And that was very evident in the Lexus display, because Lexus has got the biggest grouping of their cars with the largest front ends I've seen in cars, although Cadillac's not far behind, and neither is Lincoln. Their design configuration makes them stand out more, especially if they're not in a black-colored car. I don't know where the designers get off thinking that big is better at that front. They cannot hide behind the fact that they think that it's letting more air in, because you can get air in over the engines very effectively through orifices as small as headlights, which on one car, there are headlamps, which two of which on each of the four headlamp thing do have air funneling chambers around the headlamps themselves so that air can get in to cool various areas of the engine compartment. That's not the only cooling section. They do have grills on those cars too, but the whole concept of these larger grills, Audi is another Audi has done, in my visual opinion.
So this is an aesthetic opinion?
It's aesthetic. It's largely aesthetic, but a lot of people are noticing. And I know somebody who bought a generation older Lexus because she did not like the new grill on the front on
the
current
generation.
Oh, I could
be on that list.
And you could be, and I could be, too.
There was a Lincoln at one point. I think that they've modified that now. But there was a point where I think this was about 2 or 3, 4 years ago. The grill was just the size of the entire hood. It was
in some sense of the word, you'd think the Lexus grills are the size of the width of the tire width of the hood that's on top of it.
That's
the hoods themselves have designs in them to let air in. The pickup trucks generally, I think Dodge has got a hood that has open. Design in the hood to let air in to cool its big truck engines. Recalls. Recalls have been largely not mentioned in this show by me for several weeks now. I look at the recalls each week, and I don't think that there's anything that's really generally needed to be brought up. There is one that I have noticed in this week's unveiling of this week's recalls, and that is with the manufacturer of Honda Motor Vehicles. A number of the 2018 and 2019 models of Acura, which is the luxury side of Honda, like Lexus is a luxury side of Toyota, has got a timing belt problem. Now, a timing belt is a very serious issue in some cases. They are not chains in most cases. They are probably a composite of rubber and stronger materials, but they are toothed belts because they have to grab toothed pulleys on parts that move, and like alternators and water pumps and the kind. And there's a recall out for 2018 and 2019 model years of Acuras and Odysseys, some of the models, because the timing belt teeth may separate. The timing belts are items that should last 100,000 miles or more in most cases. Audi used to say, and still does, I think, that where they had timing belts that you were supposed to change the timing belts regardless of at either 100,000 miles, and I'm not sure whether it was a year component attached to that, or 10 years on the A8s and some of the engines that require. If you didn't do this, if the timing belt separated, you could do serious engine damage and basically require a new engine to be put in your vehicle. I do not know whether that's the case if the Honda timing belts separate, but the timing belt also, the word timing is in there to people who are listening. And they have to be put on properly so that everything that the timing belt moves in the engine, from the valve train possibly to everything else, moves at the right intervals.
So are you basically saying that if you have an Acura from 2018 or 2019 that you have to call your dealer?
Well, not all of them, but the manufacturer will notify you. I don't think that they think it's serious enough that you have to listen to Robin Leach saying it over the show. And if you have one of these vehicles, you should go in before you hear from Acura or Honda about your model having a timing belt. What's going to happen is that they'll replace the timing belts. If there's a batch of poorly produced belts, which is probably what's happened, and they know they're in a serial number area of each of these vehicles, they will notify those those owners that they need to come in and get their timing belt checked and probably replaced at Honda's expense.
He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.